The following talk was recorded at Libra Planet 2023, Charting the Course, an annual conference on current issues in ethics, social justice, and technology from the Free Software Foundation. Libra Planet is a live conference, and speakers often use slides and other visual tools to assist their presentation. You can see the videos of these talks at media.libraplanet.org or on the FSF PeerTube channel. Libra Planet speakers do not represent the mission of the Free Software Foundation. We host speakers talking about their uses of free software in different kinds of political and commercial work. The FSF supports their freedom, but does not take a position on any political issues other than those necessary to uphold the principles of free software. Like all the FSF's work on behalf of the freedom of all computer users, Libra Planet is made possible by thousands of individuals. To keep our work going, please consider becoming an associate member via my.fsf.org/join. or by making a donation at my.fsf.org/donate. You can stay informed by subscribing to our newsletter, The Free Software Supporter, at fsf.org/fss. For more information on Libra Planet, please visit libraplanet.org/conference.
Hi, everybody. My name is Seth Kinlan, or Klaatu, or not Klaatu, online. I'm in all the usual places, Mastodon, IRC. You can also check out my website for a lot of the information that I'm going to be covering today in this talk about video editing in Kdean Live. As exciting it is as it is to talk about Kdean Live, I'm not going to actually start in Kdean Live. I'm going to start where you should start if you're doing a video project, which is out in your file system. This is vital information. It's important to keep yourself organized. And this is the obligatory lecture of just how to keep yourself organized when you're doing a video editing project. I'm not going to go on too long about it, but I do want to mention it because it is important. So, if you're like me, you got a lot of footage from lots of different places and you kind of throw it into one place and then you try to edit it together. And that works. It's fine if you're going to edit something and then push it out to the world. That's great. But if it's a long project that's going to take several days or several weeks, then you really want to kind of have a sense of a project directory. So what I'm going to do right now, just out in my file system in just a regular, where's my zoom button? There we go. In a regular file manager, I'm just going to create a new directory. I'm going to call it my project. And then what I do, you don't have to do this, I automate this, but what I do is I create the sense of something called a media directory. That's what I call it anyway. In a media directory, you have folders for specific kinds of media. Your specific kinds of media will be possibly different than my kinds of media. I make allowances for my edit file, the Kdean Live edit file itself, for audio files, for video files, and then sometimes I have graphics and photos and things like that. You should at least have some kind of sense of what kind of media you have in your project. And then you use that project directory to put all your stuff. So if you have audio files hanging around, then maybe that shouldn't just be out along with your video files. Like maybe you should put those into the audio file of your project directory. You can make copies or whatever, but just keep those things together. Keep your video files together. And then I'll just remove that directory. Let's see, what else do I have? Stock footage, lots of stock footage. So I'll take that into my video directory. Okay, so now I've got a nice directory full of all of my video assets and my audio assets. The reason that's important is because, and it's all in one folder called My Project. The reason that's important is because when I start Kdean Live, I'm going to drag all of those files into my Kdean Live project. just drag them and drop them right into this this project bin. And now I've got everything together that I need. And when I come back to this project, I'll have all of my video files in one place. I'll have all my audio files in one place. And they point back to that location on my file system. And that way, should I ever move my project directory out of temporary storage and put it somewhere else, Kdenlive Live would then panic. There's a way to reassociate your files with your project, but if you have them scattered all over your file system, then you have to reassociate them one by one. Whereas if you have them all in one location, then Kdenlive will ask you, where's the new location? You point it back to your project directory, and it recursively searches through that directory, finds everything and reassociates it to your media. So it's super important to just bundle everything together into a little package that you can then give to Kdenlive to find all your stuff. Okay, so I'm gonna kind of do that part over just so I can show you all the different ways to bring in media to Kdenlive. So this is Kdenlive. This is the default interface. And this is a blank, empty project. And kind of habitually what I do initially is I save my project even before I've done anything to it. So I just I save it into my project directory, right? Because we're bundling everything together. I save it into my edit directory. You don't have to have an edit directory yourself, but again, you should have a project directory where you keep at least like everything that's associated with your project or all your Kdenlive files, however you want to organize it. And now up in the left corner of Kdenlive by default, at least, there is a tab, a little panel called the project bin. You can get files into your project by either right-clicking and adding some kind of clip or a whole folder. So I usually just add the whole folder, to be honest. I can add my audio files. But more than likely, at some point during your project, you're going to find stuff all over your hard drive. You're going to bring it into your project directory. And then because you're out here anyway, you're going to drag and drop that media over into your Kdenlive window. And you can do that. That's Kdenlive is happy to do it. It knows where this file came from. It can associate it back to the file system, no problem. That's the same as importing that clip, is just dragging and dropping. I'm going to drag and drop my whole video folder. And you might be able to see that I've got a little bit of a warning here. You've already inserted one of these clips into your project. Do you want to duplicate it? I can say no or cancel, or I could say duplicate or cancel. And then I could maybe move that into my video folder to keep it organized. Double click on a directory to get into the folder. Click the up arrow icon to get back to your main project. Cool. Okay. So I think that probably makes sense. I'm going to really quick just check IRC in live workshop streaming. Okay, great. Okay, cool. No questions yet. All right, so we got video files, we got audio files. Editing video is just obviously taking video clips and putting them together to form some kind of story, something that you want to tell people. That could start with the video. You can just kind of feel your way around with the video. It might start with a script or something like that. So I've got some sound files, I think, or did I, where are those files? Yes, I do. Okay, cool. I've got some sound files here that I'll start with. There are two kinds of tracks in Cadian Live. There are audio files and there are video files. So I've got a sound file here. So Cadian Live knows to put it onto an audio track. They're kind of hard to tell the difference between an audio and a video, but if you look real close, audios are A1, A2, A3, they cascade down. Video files, V1, V2, they cascade up. So I've got audio that was not recorded with my video, but I do have video here. And if I associate those, if I put those into the same, on top of each other, so things on top of each other play at the same time. To zoom into the timeline, you can hit the control key and then the mouse wheel on your, use the mouse wheel to zoom in and out. So if you need a little bit more, more detail on clips, you can do that. And that's pretty helpful for editing like little sound clips or getting rid of like the slates at the tail ends of the clips. You can edit clips simply by dragging and dropping the edge of the clip. So for instance, this sound file is okay, but you can see that there's a little bit of silence before the sound. It's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's in this case, it's not really necessary. So if I roll my mouse over the edge of the clip, you can see that it kind of changes the cursor shape, click and drag to the start, the actual start of the sound. Click and drag the clip back into place, and now we've got a snappier start. The other way to edit a clip, if you want to get out of a clip sooner than it actually ends, this one I use all the time, is the parentheses, or the right bracket. It's above zero, whatever you call it, parentheses, bracket. So if you hit shift zero, essentially, that cuts the clip. I'll do it again. That cuts the clip at your current playhead position, wherever the playhead is. Shift zero cuts it right off. That's a super useful one. I use that one all the time. I am navigating the timeline, by the way, by clicking, by pressing and holding my mouse wheel. That's the sort of the quick way to navigate around the timeline. You can do it with the little sideways scroll bar thing, horizontal scroll bar, but that's kind of, it takes a while. If you got a scroll wheel, just click and hold and drag around. Okay, so we've got our audio clip here. It ends a little bit before the video clip ends, which, I mean, sometimes that might be what you want. Maybe that's by design. In this case, I don't really need that. So once again, I can either just click and drag and it kind of snaps into place to find the end of the clip underneath it, or I could position my playhead and do my shift zero trick again. And then let's say I want to add another clip. So I'll just drag and drop that into position. And now I've got another clip in my timeline. There are other ways to do this though. This clip is nearly a static shot, so maybe I won't use that as a demonstration. Maybe I'll put that in. So I'm going to go up a level in my project bin. I'm going to go back to my audio files. I'm going to find the next audio clip in my pretend sequence, which I happen to know is this one. Okay. So I know that I need a city street here, according to my audio. I'm not sure if everyone can hear the audio that's actually playing, but just trust me. There's a voiceover happening, and it's describing what the shots are. So let's say I need this city street, and then I want to cut to a busier city street. Go to Vegas. Ah, okay. So this is interesting. So the next clip that I brought in has a couple of new traits to it. One is that it's got a audio file already associated with it, and that audio file moves around with it. It's probably traffic noise. I'm imagining. Yeah, it's sort of traffic ambience. So I don't really need that in this scenario. So I need to disassociate the audio from the video. So if you have sound that you took but you don't need in your actual edit, you can get rid of it by right-clicking on the clip with that sound and selecting ungroup clips. Now you might be able to see that I can select either the video or the audio independently. And if I don't need the audio, then I can just hit delete with it selected and it goes away. Okay, so I'm gonna show a different way to get video into the timeline. And I'll use that Vegas clip so we can ungroup it again. So whenever you select a clip from your bin over on the left, you'll notice probably that this middle window called the clip monitor displays what you've got selected. So this is a very traditional sort of almost old school way of editing, but it's got a lot of value in some cases. So the idea is that you're going to audition clips here in this monitor before you make it appear over in your final project. So this is especially useful if you've been shooting a video and you've got like five different takes of the same thing, the same person saying the same line five different times. The director knows which is the good take. The camera person knows which one is the good take. You don't know which is the good take. Or maybe you do. Maybe you had an assistant editor looking through all your clips and marking the good ones. But even then, like, who says what's good, right? So maybe you want to look at all those clips. So the idea is that you're going to look through all those clips in your monitor and find the one that you like. And then you're going to find just the part that you like. So, I mean, this is just a city street, so there's not a whole lot to look at, but we'll press play and we'll just assume that what we really want is maybe some interesting activity over on this video screen over on the left of the frame. So what I'm going to do is when I see something that I like, I'm going to hit the I key on my keyboard. And then when I feel like I have enough, I'm going to hit the O key. That's for in and out. So I'm going to hit play. That was a big flash. We'll go in there. And out there. Why not? So you might be able to see that there's sort of this indication of what's sort of a selection of what's selected out of this video clip in blue now. And I can even change that. Like if I feel like I maybe waited too long to get out of this clip, I can shorten it a little bit. And it tells you how long the clip is, even like as you drag. Like that's a good, right there's 5 seconds of Vegas footage. That seems enough of Vegas for anybody. So I can now drag and drop this clip straight into my timeline by grabbing hold of it and dropping it. I can also use these buttons below the clip monitor which gives me a couple of different options. There's an insert clip and an overwrite clip. So if I wanted to cut away to Vegas for some reason, I could put my, could click around in my timeline, find a good place for this clip to go. Maybe I'll put it right there. I've got this clip active in my clip monitor. There's an endpoint and an outpoint set. So I could then do maybe an insert edit. So I'll do that. And as you can see, it cuts that the pre-existing clip into two halves and inserts, drops in that clip right in between the two sides. Like I say, this is a very old school way of editing. It's called three-point editing. The first point is your endpoint. The second point is your outpoint. And then the third point is putting it into the timeline. It's three-point editing. It's really useful for those sort of conversation shots where you have one person saying all of their lines all in a row. And then you have another clip where the camera swooshed around and got the other person saying all their lines. Of course, those are two separate clips. So what people used to do in their video editor is they'd find they'd drop in one person's lines so that it's just one person's conversation. And then they would go to the other person and they would just take the chunks out of that long clip of the conversation and insert edit them through that conversation. So it was kind of a quick way to do cutbacks back and forth, back and forth. You go in and tidy it up later, but that's the idea. Okay, so that's that concept. There is that overwrite edit as well. So again, I've got the clip active in my monitor. That's important. And then I've got my playhead set to where I want that third point of the edit to happen. And then I click the overwrite button. And as you can probably guess, that's going to just overwrite the clip in the timeline. So it's basically kind of a quick and easy way to cut off the ends of your clips, which is actually pretty nice. Because if you think about it, like without that, I would have had to go in, drag all my clips to the left a little, or to the left a little bit. That's a bunch of clicking around. Whereas if you just set your endpoint, your outpoint, you do an overwrite edit, you can just drop it in and forget about it. So that's kind of nice. Okay, so I've still got this location sound in Vegas. So I'm going to just for reinforcement, right-click on it, do an ungroup clips that disassociates them from one another. I can now move them around independently or just straight up delete them. I'm going to just check the IRC really quick to see if there are any questions. I don't see any questions. That's good. Okay. So the cool thing, I guess, about video editing is that you don't have to be quite so sort of literal in how you tell your story. You can move things around. You can cut away to different things. So maybe I want Vegas to be a little bit earlier in my edit. I can move Vegas up in the timeline. And the way that a video editor sees the world is that things at the top take precedence over things below them. Just like you're looking down at like a terrarium or a stack of transparent glass. You get to see what's on top before you see the stuff below it. So if I play this, I see the city, and then I've got Vegas on top of it. This is really useful for when you're not quite sure what you want to edit out yet, and you're thinking, maybe I want to get into this sooner, but maybe I don't. So you kind of play around and you can just kind of layer things over on top of each other. It doesn't cost any more to do it that way than any other way, which I'll show you in a moment. It's just, it adds a little bit of flexibility. The other way to do that kind of edit is to do what's called a, what is it called? A ripple edit? Yes, a ripple edit. This is pretty handy. I use this a lot. So I've got a clip here followed by another clip, but I've decided all of a sudden I want Vegas to come in sooner to replace the empty city street. If I use my ripple edit tool, just right down here in the toolbar, or it's the letter R on your keyboard for a shortcut, you can grab on to the end of a clip and drag it over, and you can probably see as I do it, the clip after it follows along. Now, if I didn't do that, the process would have to be, you'd take the old clip, shorten it a bunch, move your other clip into place, and then kind of extend your other clip to meet it, which is totally doable. You can do that. That's not a problem. It's just sometimes a lot faster to hit R and just do a ripple edit and drag everything after it around with it. Now, that can have some dangerous effects if you do that and you've got like an hour of footage afterwards and you're just rippling, you're making one little ripple edit. Well, now you've thrown off your entire edit because everything's gotten dragged potentially sooner. So, you know, do that with care, but it is a nice shortcut, especially early in the edit when there's not really a whole lot after it that depends on positioning. Okay, I'm going to go back up to my little script here. I'm going to grab the next city street narration, drop it into my edit. And I'm going to get some people shots because I don't have any people in this edit yet. I think I have people shots. Actually, I'm going to cut to a beach instead for reasons. So here's some beach footage, and I'm going to add that to my timeline. Now, you can probably tell, possibly, and Cadian Live should be warning me about this. I'm not really sure why it's not warning me about this, actually. Might have a setting somewhere where I told it not to tell me about this, but you might be able to tell just kind of by comparing the images. But this one was shot, this is older footage, this is shot at a different aspect ratio than this. I think this is like 720p or something, and this is 1080. And you can tell because there's black bars on either side of the image. It's a little bit more square than this fancy rectangle shot. So that's fine. Cadian Live doesn't care about that. It won't disallow you to use footage that isn't exactly the same as other footage. But it is something to be aware of. There are fixes for that. And I'm about halfway through the talk, so maybe it's time to start talking about that. Yeah, I think so. Okay, so we're going to fix this. Because I think the editing, I mean, I think you probably get the idea of the editing. This editing process, you rinse and you repeat. You keep doing this process. You drop in your clips. And you drop in your clips. And eventually you have a story that you've told. And you just keep doing that. So the problem is that a lot of times your clips come from lots of different places. And sometimes one was shot on your cell phone and another one was shot on your nice fancy DSLR camera. And those are two different profiles. They're using two different codecs. Maybe they've got a slightly different aspect ratio or something. Maybe some footage is archival and you're trying to match it to other footage. Whatever the scenario, you're probably using media. Actually, I'm going to pause and I'm going to save this project. Kdenlive is really good about backing things up. Like if there were to be a crash or if I was to forget to save something and closed the file, it's really good about making sure that you've saved your data. So I have never really had a problem with that in the past, I don't know, 4 years or probably more, but certainly since 4 years ago, it's been great about saving backups for you, but still obviously good to save. Okay, so fixing this footage, trying to match this to this. There are two different ways to get your footage to sort of go together better. And one way is sort of like from front to back, and then the other way is kind of from back to front. So from front to back, it's you have to stop and kind of assess your footage and kind of figure out what you have, what you're dealing with. There's a lot of different ways to do that. You can do it with an application called Media Info, which I just use it in the terminal, but it gives you all kinds of, you probably can't see what I'm typing though, so it's not very useful. Let's make that bigger. There we go. Really big. So if I do media info on videos, and let's see, there's the Beach Small movie. Let's find out more information about that. Okay, yeah. So this is a Video Beach movie. There's the codecs, QuickTime movie. Here's the size. The width of that is 720. The height is 486. So that's, I don't even know what that is. It's not 720p. Or maybe it is, I don't know. So those are the specs of that. And then let's look at, for instance, probably what Vegas would be one to compare it to, Las Vegas. Width is 1920, height is 1080. So, and the aspect ratio is important too, right? It's 16:9 aspect ratio, whereas the other one was the dreaded 4:3. So that's why it looks a little bit square compared to the Vegas shot. So if you do this early enough, in other words, and you do media info or you look at your clips here in Kdenlive, you can right click on a clip and then go down to clip properties. And that shows you a bunch of information about your clip. Not as much as I would have imagined, actually. I guess that's maybe why I use Media Info. Yeah, that's not quite as much information as I'd hoped. Gives you a little bit. Yeah, that's not super useful though. Okay, I guess that's why I use Media Info. So if you do this early enough and you look at your video clips, then you can think to yourself, okay, well, what do I want to standardize on? What kind of project am I creating? Am I doing a 16:9 project or am I doing a 4:3 project? So those are the aspect ratios of the videos that I was just looking at. Am I doing a project at 1920 by 1080 or am I doing one at 720 by 486 or whatever? Which is a really oddball. That's a really strange resolution. It's usually like 720 by 960 or 1280. So if you make that decision up front, then you can standardize based on what's most important to you. So that's one way of doing it. The other way is to just decide what kind of project you're creating and then force everything to sort of fit into that project. Both ways are equally valid. I think probably I tend to go with the second way, where I say, well, I want to deliver a 1920 by 1080 project, like a high definition project. That's what I want to deliver. So everything that's coming into my project is going to have to conform to that. And in this particular case, most of my clips are 1920 by 1080, so that makes sense as well. The odd man out ones, I'll force those to adapt. How do we force them to adapt? Well, there's no great way to up-res stuff, arguably, but there are ways. So the easiest way is the effect tab in Kdenlive. I keep that in my middle panel. This being Qt based, you can really drag these things all over the place, but that's kind of where I keep these things. There's a lot of information in this panel. So the first thing, these buttons up here are basically filters. So this is saying this filter, the default filter on the left is everything. Well, we know that we want to affect video. So I can trim my selections to just effects that are relevant to video by clicking the video button. If I'm affecting audio, then I can do that. I can also just look at favorites that I might have saved in the past. Or I can download new ones, which I won't go into. There's a bunch of stuff that you just download from Kdenlive, the website. But yeah, so I'll go to the video one just to show you, just so you get an idea of how much there is to choose from. It can be a little overwhelming. There's a lot in here. Now these effects include the effects that ship with Kdenlive, as well as a set of plugins called Freor, maybe is how you say it. It's F-R-E-I-0-R. I think it's Freor. So there are a lot of effects, and there's a little bit of some double up on each other. Like you might wonder why there are two of essentially the same things, and that's probably wise because they're from different sets of effects. But there are a lot of them. One of my go-to ones though is the transform filter, which is in the transform, distort, and perspective category. Honestly, I just save it to my favorites because I use it all the time. So here's this transform effect. It's going to transform my footage, as the name implies. To add that to my clip, I'm going to drag and drop on top of the clip. All right, there's an effect there. You can kind of tell that there's an effect. If you look real close, it does list that effect on the clip. Unless you select it. I never noticed that before. So if you select it, the effect is not listed, but it is listed over here on the far right edge of the Kdenlive interface, or wherever you have the effects and composition tab. I keep it over here on the right, just makes sense to me. Okay, so this is the interface for that effect tool. Once again, there's a lot going on here. There's a lot of flexibility. That's why I'm particularly fond of this effect. We're going to basically ignore most everything except what's relevant to this problem, which is the size, right? The size of this clip does not fill the screen of our project. So I'm going to go down here. So actually, and I should highlight for a moment, the two requirements that you really, really need to have met before you go messing around with an effect is, they're really simple, but they're easy to forget. Your playhead needs to be over the video clip. So if your playhead is way over here, that there's danger there. We'll probably find out why, because I'll probably forget myself. But you want your playhead over the clip. You'll know that your playhead is over the clip because in your movie screen, you'll see that clip. The problem happens when you have that clip several times throughout your movie and your playhead is on an old version of that clip. And you think, okay, my my playhead is over that clip, but actually it's not. It's over an old version of that clip. So have your playhead over the clip of the thing that you want to affect, and then have the thing that you want to affect selected. That's, again, kind of easy to tell, because if it's not selected, then there's no information over in your effects and composition tab. But once again, once you start building up a project and you have a bunch of clips with effects on them, it's pretty darned easy to accidentally have the wrong clip selected, and then you start moving your effects around and you're affecting the thing that you didn't want to affect. So you must have your clip selected and your playhead over that clip. And those, like I say, those can be two different things. You can have a clip selected but not have your playhead over it. So, okay. All right, so what we're doing is we're going to just treat this like a slider interface. I'm just going to click on size, and I'm going to drag to the right to increase the size. And we'll look up here as I do that. So I'm just clicking and dragging, and dragging there. As you can see, you can just eyeball it. You don't need to do this any particular way. This is, you just, if you like what you see, then you have fixed the problem. As you can see, the beach now takes up the whole screen. One side effect of that, obviously, is that it's kind of off-centered now, right? Like, we blew it up from the center. So, I mean, technically, it's very centered. But, like, visually, it's off-center because, I don't know, that's just a weird shot. What are we looking at? So, luckily, in the transform tool, you have the position of the frame available as well. You have X and Y axis here. So, again, I'm just going to treat it like a slider, click on the Y, and then I'm going to click and drag to the right and the left to see what happens. So clicking right, it's moving the origin point and the video clip. And you can see if you drag too far, you start to see the edges again. So don't do that. But yeah, just kind of fix it and make it look like a better frame. And that's pretty much it. Now we've, I think, fixed that problem. Turn this sound off so I don't have to listen to it. You can mute sound over here. The mute button on an audio track. It's a nice way to just sort of focus on the image sometimes. So we'll press play, and there's the video of the beach reframed so that it fits. Simple. And I'll save because I did stuff. Okay, so getting short on time here. So I'm gonna take, I want to now talk about how to make this stuff look sort of, I don't know, better. Because, I mean, these are all nice. These are stock footages that I've had on a hard drive for, geez, ages. So this is fine. This is nice. But I'm going to take, let's take this clip of a woman's face. And once again, like, it's fine. It looks fine. It's well shot. She's happy. Everything's fine. But believe it or not, footage straight out of a camera is very frequently not as good as you think it is. And I'm going to demonstrate that now. So I'm going to go back to effects, and I'm going to, I'm going to do what I use first. I'll show you an alternative, but this is my favorite tool. Again, it's in the video effects button, or it's in the video category, and it is in the color and image correction category. So here's Bezier curves. You can also use curves, to be honest. Actually, maybe I'll use curves. That's just it's a simpler version of the same tool. Either way, it's the curves that matter. So I'm going to take the curves effect. I'm going to drag it onto my clip. How do we affect a clip? Well, we make sure that our playhead is over the clip, and then we select the clip. And that ensures that the interface for the effect comes up over here in the effect tab. I think for this, I'm going to actually drag this tab into the middle just so I can focus on it a little bit better. I never do this in real life, but I think it's probably easier to sort of zoom in on. Okay, so here's these curves. What does it mean? What's it telling us? It's telling us a lot. What I'm going to use it for right now, and I imagine I'll use it for a couple of things, but it's one channel per curve is how I use it. So I want to affect the Luma curve. It's okay if you don't know what a Luma curve is. Luma is the brightness and the darkness of an image. So in this case, she has a really bright white background. So there's not a whole lot to do there either way. But believe it or not, there's something we can do just sort of for our subject. And one of the things about digital cameras and digital color space in general is that it can handle less than the actual real world. And as a corollary to that, analog cameras that take pictures on celluloid film, they can handle a lot more data than modern digital cameras. So in digital imagery, it's kind of like it's being honest and it's just saying, well, these are the levels, these are the light levels I have. I start at absolute zero and I go to absolute 100 or 0 to 1 or whatever measurement you want to use. And it's a straight line from here to there. But in real life, that's not how we see things in real life, or it's not how we want to see things in real life. And it's certainly not how analog cameras see things. So we're going to trick our digital image into being more like film. And part of that is to give ourselves a really rich shadow region. Like in real life and in film cameras, when you look at dark shadows, they're dark. They're like really dark, like proper dark. So I'm going to grab onto this curve and I'm going to give it a little bit of a slope. And you can see as I do this, if you look in the at the image on the right there, if you look at her sort of like, if you look in this region here, like right in the sort of the dark part of her hair, for instance, you'll see that darken up as I do it. Here I go. You can see that just kind of deepen. It's a deeper shadow now. And how close to the edge I get sort of focuses how much of the image I affect. So I'm just giving her a little bit, and this is actually where a Bezier curve is nice because you can kind of cause sharper curves. So I'm just going to give her just a little bit of a curve in the shadows. And then I'm going to turn my attention up here because now that I've darkened the shadows, I've kind of darkened the overall curve, the overall image. So I'm going to do the opposite in the highlight regions, which is up here. I'm going to brighten that up. And it's usually a little bit of a... Now I'm faking a Bezier curve. It's usually a little bit of a... A little bit of playing around, you know, trying to correct for one thing, and then you go and uncorrect for that over on the other end. But that's not bad. That's pretty good. An interesting thing about this sort of thing is that you almost never really realize what you've done until you see it turned off and on again. But we won't do that yet. There's another thing that I want to do first. So I'm going to go back over to my effects tab here. And I'm going to get, how should I do this? Maybe I'll do a color balance. Yeah, I'll do a color balance. Drag and drop that onto her clip again. And now if I go back to my image, my effect composition stack tab, you see that I have the curve filter. And under the curve filter, I've got this new color balance tab. Bunch of sliders. So humans have blood coursing through their bodies, our bodies. I'm human. And So there's when we see photos of humans, if we're trying to portray them realistically, one of the vital things that other humans love to see in other humans is sort of a sign of life. And one of the signs of life is just that sort of nice sort of vibrancy. So red and yellow combined, we call it amber in film. And human skin tone, I don't care about the complexion of the human. All human skin tone loves amber. So does hair, too. So human skin is usually considered a mid-tone. So here's this slider called red mid-tone. And if I increase the red mid-tones a little bit, or a lot bit, you can see that in this particular image, it's making a liar out of me. And actually, the mid-tones don't, her flesh tone isn't in the mid, in the mid range. So I'm going to guess that it's probably in the highlights, red highlights. Yeah, that's where the red is. Okay, cool. So I'm just going to bring up the red just a little bit. I don't know how many people are familiar with color wheels. You're probably vaguely familiar with them. The opposite of blue on a color wheel is yellow. So if you want to add yellow to an image, you remove blue. There is a blue highlight slider. So red and cyan are on opposite sides. Green and magenta are on opposite sides. And then blue and yellow. So that's, if you look at a color wheel, you'll see it. It'll be like on the opposite side. So if I subtract blue, I'm adding yellow. So like I say, yellow and red equals amber. Do it too much and she starts to look a little bit jaundiced. So less is more. So I'll just, although sometimes more is more as well. So I'm going to go a little bit farther than I think appropriate. And this is really just, it's one of those things. This is the color correction stage. There's no right or wrong. And in fact, you might not want her to look more alive. You might want her to look dead. Maybe you want her to look ghastly or like she's being oppressed. And maybe you want to add, you know, sort of like some bluish tones or something like that. So there's no right way to do this. But typically, if you're doing like shots with humans, add amber, it'll look great. So lightness, darkness, and then amber. Now, like I say, a lot of times you don't actually see what you've done while you're doing it. But up here at the top of your effects stack, there's a little eyeball icon right there. I'm going to click that off, and then I'll click it back on. Look at the image here, and you're going to see what we've done. So this is no effect, and that's with an effect. I mean, it's night and day once you see it one after the other, right? Like that's before. It looks like there's like a layer of dust or like grime on the lens almost. And she looks kind of gray, like kind of ashen. Turn that back on. And it's like you've wiped away the grime and brought color into your image. So even on shots that you are positive don't need any help at all, you think this is a fine shot. This is perfectly normal. This is great. This is beautiful. There's no better version of this shot. Yes, there is. The better version of that shot is where you've crushed the shadows, popped the highlights, and added a little bit of amber to a shot with a human in it. We can quickly see what that can do. For instance, if I right click on this shot that I've now color corrected, right click on it and copy it. Now, KadenLive is very clever. It has copied a lot of information there. It's got the clip. It's got the duration of the clip. It's got the effects. So if I go over here to my bicycle shot, right click on it, I can choose to paste just the effects. And that does the same thing, the exact same thing. Now, these two are obviously shot in different locations. So this is just a starting point. Like, I think there's an argument here. There's an argument here that amber is a bit much. So I'm going to have my playhead over my bicycle shot. I'm going to select my bicycle shot. That means that this effect stack is the one on the bicycle shot, right? Like I said, once your project becomes really complex, it's really easy to get confused. And you'll think, okay, I'm on the bike shot, so now I can do stuff. I'll just reduce the red. Oh my gosh, it's not working. Nothing's working. Why isn't it working? Well, the reason is because I've got my woman shot selected instead of my bike shot selected. Now I can select and change things and see that it works. So anyway, there's an argument here probably, you know, that maybe that amber didn't really work that well on the bike shot, or maybe it did, or possibly maybe what I actually need to do is mids. Nope, still not mids today. So weird that the humans aren't in the midtones on these clips. I don't know why not. You can do that. You could add a little bit of green to counteract the magenta, maybe just a little, and have faith that, actually that looks pretty nice. I like that. So once again, if we turn it off and then back on again, we should see that, oh yeah, that's much better. I mean, look at that. It is night and day. It's like a layer of dust or the actual image you meant to get. And again, there's no right or wrong. Like if you think that, you know, if you're doing something darker and you want something really to just to, you know, you're trying to create a mood, you can go crazy. You can do whatever you want. It's just up to you in terms of what you're trying to convey to people. So those are the two must do effects at the end of your project. Adjust your shadows and then adjust the color balance. And those are probably the two easiest tools to use them with. There is, let's get some other shot. I know I'm running out of time here swiftly, but here's a person effect. What's it called? I think it's called lift gamma and gain. I think this is the one. Drag that onto here, select the clip. Oh, that is nice. So if this makes more sense to you because it's a lot more visual, then this might be what you want. So you can kind of darken it a little bit, punch it up a little bit. So again, you're just kind of, you're taking all the dark areas and making them darker, and making the light areas a little bit lighter. Kind of tough because he does have this kind of spot on his nose. The makeup department was a little bit off that day, I guess. Just adjusting it a little bit. That looks probably okay. And then again, off and on again. And you can see that even though the shot seemed perfectly fine when I brought it in, like it's just so much better with just a little bit of adjustment. So if this one is more to your liking, then you can use this one. That's lift gamma gain. I really like the flexibility of the curves, but I do acknowledge also that curves might confuse you. And there are different channels that you can adjust with your curves as well. But again, it's just one channel per curve. So if you wanted to do a color balance with curves, you can do that. You can go to curves, drop it on there. And then maybe you just want to do the reds. We know from experience that her face is actually in the highlights. So we would want to kind of start to go up here at the highlights. We could correct down here a little bit if we thought we were getting too much red somewhere. Yeah, there, that's pretty good. And then you'd have to, because remember, it's amber, it's red and yellow. So you need another curve This is actually how I do it. It seems tedious as now that I'm doing it. I don't know why I do it this way, but this is what I do. So again, yellow is actually less blue. So I would take the top and kind of like add a little bit of yellow, just a little bit. Boy, that yellow is strong sometimes. And then I'll just maybe correct a little bit. I mean, it's really cool because you can create like some really interesting effects. Like that gives her a little bit of, it brings out the red, but also kind of gives her that sort of bluish kind of edgy bleach bypass look. Let me get rid of the old one. So then off and on again. Yeah. This is the kind of stuff I could just do all day. Like this is my favorite part of the editing process. But I also think it's one of the most important parts because after you cut the footage together, which as you've seen is pretty easy, then the next step is trying to make it look like, you know, like you care about the project, like you care about the subject. And that's I think in the effects. Let me look. Well, yeah, let me open it up to questions. That would be the smart thing to do. So that's, oh, actually, sorry. One more thing. How to get this thing out of Caden Live. It's super easy. Go to project. Go to render. And then in the render pop-up dialog, you've got a bunch of codecs that you can choose from. WebM is a really, really good one. It's VP8 and Vorbis, so free software through and through. It's a great compression ratio. Like it produces files that are not super, you know, super big, but look fantastic. Like honestly, it's compressed. It is a compression, right? You're not just dumping it as raw video. So it is compressing the footage, but it does it really, really nicely. For my money, that's the one to use. And then you just click render to file, and then that would render it, which now I won't do that right now because there might be some important questions. So that's just project render, and then just render it. Okay, I think that's it. I think that's everything. If you have questions, let me answer them.
Thank you very much, Seth. There were some questions on IRC. So one is, which version of Caden Live are you using today?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. Let's find out. 23.04.2.
Thank you. And then yep. What are you using to zoom into various parts of the screen?
That's just KDE. There's a zoom function in my KDE desktop, which I won't be able to find now, but it's like a screen magnifying thing. Probably, yeah, I don't even know where it is. Effects. Appearance? Where's the effects? Workspace? Desktop effects. Here it is. So KDE, desktop workspace behavior, desktop effects. Somewhere in here, there's like a zoom right there. Zoom. Yeah, I love it. It's great for presentations, as you can probably agree. But yeah, that's what I do.
All right, great. And could you also show us how to add text or logos to the videos?
Yes. I'm so glad that you, yes, absolutely. Okay. Text is super easy to add and kind of fun. So one thing that I didn't mention as well, which I probably should, is that you can add more tracks. And I'm mentioning this because a lot of times once you start adding text, you start running out of space because you're like overlaying text on top of video that's been overlaid on top of video. So if you just right click on a video track, insert track, and then it asks you how many tracks do you want, where do you want them to be placed, what kind of track, blah, blah, blah. So that just gives us a little bit more room to play with in the vertical space. So that's just one thing that usually I start doing once I start getting to that sort of adding text stage. Okay, so I'm going to make a new folder in my project bin just because that's the way I like to keep my projects organized. I'm going to call it title. I'll double click into title. Actually, I'm going to save. And then I'm going to right click and do an add title clip. Oh, that has, yeah, this is good to. So one thing to know, and this is useful, but it's also kind of, it can be a little bit strange too sometimes, is that when you go to create a title in Caden Live, it assumes that you're sort of designing your title over the spot where your playhead is. So if that's helpful, then that's good, because now you've got your image and you can start adding text. But if that's not what you want and you're just doing text that you want like over a black screen or something, what I do is I just move my playhead over a black space and then add it. So just be aware that your playhead position controls what comes up in your text editing interface. Okay, let's get back to the text editing interface. So I'm going to right click in my project bin, in my title directory, and add title clip. And this brings up the title interface. This is a really great interface. I love this. Honestly, this is like really, really nice. It's gotten so nice. So we see a couple of notations here. It might be hard to tell, but you can kind of see an inner red box, an outer red box, and then a really, really outer red box. Those are called title boxes. Those are guidelines for you. Traditionally, back on the old TV sets, like the big CRT tubes, the edges of the frame were never guaranteed because I guess different manufacturers did slightly different things with the beveling or yeah, whatever. So everyone sort of got into the habit of just making sure that titles kind of fit into sort of the middle of the screen. And that way, if some of the edges were cut off, you weren't missing a letter or something. So that's what these red boxes are supposed to be sort of indicating. It's like, don't go farther than these red boxes. So the inner red box is called a title safe box, I guess. The outer one is frame, I think. And then the outer one is just, I mean, that's literally that you cannot go farther than that because the image just doesn't go beyond that. So technically you're meant to kind of to keep everything within that inner red box. Okay, so there's a couple of tools up here along the top. There's, I don't know what that is, a selection tool. Text tool is what you'll probably typically be using. So I'll click that, click somewhere in here, and then project by Seth Kinlan. There's over here on the right, there's all kinds of orientation and formatting markers. So I could do sort of a left justify, or I could do center. And then I can drag and drop the titles wherever I want. Lots of different properties I can adjust. I can do a different font. I can do a different size. I can audition different sizes just by scrolling. Let's do like 166. Yeah. Okay. So that, you know, this starts to threaten my safety, right? It's going over the edge a little bit. Are you comfortable with that? It depends on your destination. Like if you feel like your video is just going to be playing on the internet, there's no assumption that the edges of your frame are ever going to be threatened, you can go pretty big. But if you're a traditionalist, or if you were brought up at your old jobs to respect those lines, like some of us were, you can't do it. So, okay, there. Now, what's really nice is that there's alignment tools here as well. So I can just click, center it on the vertical axis and align it horizontally or vice versa. So that's the middle of my frame. And then I'll click create title. And now I have a clip that says the text, and I can put it wherever I want to. I can treat it exactly like a clip. It is a video clip now. So I've selected it so it comes up in my middle, my project monitor. I can do an insert clip, and that inserts it into my timeline, pushes everything over equally by equal amounts to the right. I'll undo that, or I can select it and drag it into my thing. And if it's over top of some other video, then you get to see both. Now, arguably, that's a little bit hard to read. So I could go back up into my project bin. I could right click and select edit clip. And I could do something else with this. I could make it darker. There is an outline ability. Ah, here it is. Outline. I could say, I want there to be a dark outline there of just black. And that can kind of make it easier to read, although some of those lowercase letters start to get a little bit ugly. So maybe I'll just make it all capitals, recenter it. Seems okay. I don't know. I think arguably I probably wouldn't put text over that. That's a pretty busy frame, but you get the idea. Cool thing too is that anything in Caden Live, any clip, this is a little bit hard to see, but if you roll over a clip, you can see that there's this little green button or a little green dot that sort of jumps up at you. This is a really nice feature. This is the fade in feature. So you can click that green button and drag it as far out as you want, usually out of 6 seconds, 3 seconds is probably enough, sometimes 6 seconds, I guess. And now, if you'll notice, at the beginning of the clip, there is no text. I'm going to press play, and we'll see that text fade in like that. It's a 3 second fade about. You could do it slower. Dynamic, you can adjust it. And like I say, you can do that on any kind of clip. So maybe I want the text and the video. I just eyeball it. Maybe I want both of them to fade in together. There we go. Super simple. You don't have to fiddle around with effects for that. It's just built into every clip.
That's fantastic. Thank you very much for showing that. I'm interrupting because we have a lot of other questions too. So one question from Extreme Monkey is, can Bezier curves be used for outdoor lighting in raw footage? It's about standardizing it because the lumen are so crazy outside in fluctuations.
I don't think they're keyframable is the problem. So if that's part of the question, then the answer is just kind of no. These are not keyframable. So I think basically the answer is no. I wish it weren't. I wish there was a better answer. So some effects, if I'm understanding the question correctly, and I think I am, some effects have the ability to be keyframed. So you can adjust things dynamically as the image progresses. I know transform is one of them, so I guess I'll use that as the example. So this bar right here is what you're looking for. This little animation timeline is what it is. If an effect has that, then you can adjust properties as the clip progresses by simply inserting a new keyframe. So if I say keyframe there, and I want to get big and maybe zoom in on her eye or something, because people like eyes. Then we'll see that as I play it, it moves in. You can't do that, as far as I know. I cannot think of an effect for lighting, and certainly not on Bezier curves, that are keyframeable like that. So,
thank you. Another question is, what about audio effects? Does this work similarly to the video effects filters in Caden Live?
Yeah, I've got to admit that I don't do a lot of audio work in Caden Live. I'm kind of, again, sort of a traditionalist, for better or for worse. I'm not convinced that it's for the better. But yes, basically they're the same as video effects. You drag and drop them onto the clips. And then as long as you have that clip selected, you see the effect and you can change things. So it's, you know, for really quick, like odd level adjustment, that sort of thing. I should do more probably in Caden Live, but I do my whole mix in Audacity. I edit my clips, and then I export just the audio. And then I take that over to Audacity or QTractor or Ardour, your favorite audio application. And I do all of my corrections there, because that's just what I'm used to. Like I say, I don't know that that's for the better. I'm sure there's a lot of great reasons not to do that. And there's a lot in Caden Live now for audio. So like you can really, really, like, again, it's keyframeable. So if I need to do like level adjustments at a certain point, maybe there's a noise that happens that's just way too loud, then I could find that noise. Let's pretend like that noise is there. I could find that noise, add a keyframe, and then find the point where the noise doesn't happen. Add a keyframe. Go back to the first keyframe, knock the volume down a little bit, and then of course that volume will auto return to where it was before, and so then you've made a little dip. And actually I did it wrong, because I forgot to key in before that, but you get the idea, I think. That would be, there we go, made a little dip in the audio. So it is possible to do audio effects in Caden Live. I just personally don't, because I've always been taught to do your audio work in an audio application.
As we are already talking about importing things, does Caden Live have live imported assets where you could, for example, edit a file in GIMP and then save it and have the results immediately available where you used it in Caden Live?
Yeah. It's really nice. Let's do this real quick. I don't have any graphics. It's fine. Let's go to Unsplash really quick and grab a parrot. We'll download this one, because this happens to me all the time. So you'll grab some kind of asset. I'm going to put it into the folder of the project where it belongs. Save that. Bring in my graphic directory. So I've got this parrot, really want to end on the parrot. And then I realize, oh, wait a minute, this is the wrong aspect ratio. The parrot doesn't go all the way to the edge of the frame. I think you can right click probably and like tell it to edit the asset. I don't really see it. I guess maybe not. Maybe that's not a function. That's not how I do it anyway. So what I do is I go out to the graphic itself. I open it with something. GIMP would work. I'm just going to do it with GwynView, the image editor or the image viewer for Caden Live. And you can even see, like, I literally, this happens to me all the time. I already have it when I go to crop. I already have it set to 1920 because this is how often I do this. So I'll crop my image to something a little bit better. Crop. I'm saving it here right now. If I get hands off the keyboard, Caden Live, it's already recognized the change. So yeah, super nice.
Very cool. Next question is, are there tips to speed up the rendering?
Yeah, sure. Get a render farm. I don't know. No, unfortunately, no. There's really not. Get a faster computer. I wish there were ways. I mean, I don't have like a terribly fast computer, but the render's not that bad for me. I guess it depends, obviously, on the length of the thing that you're rendering. So yeah, the short answer is no. Like, get a better computer. I've not cracked the code on making rendering faster in any application other than like 3D rendering, where you literally have like a cluster rendering your stuff. Sorry. Oh, you know what? Okay, actually, one tip maybe. Something's chiming and I don't know what that is, but anyway, one thing is that maybe fewer effects. Like, the more effects you put on your clips, like the more you have to render, right? Like, your computer is creating new stuff, so it takes longer. So for a faster render in a pinch, like, just don't put effects on your clips. But that's painful to say, because as we've seen, all clips benefit from it. So yeah, that does increase the render time, though. That's my answer. Am I still online? I don't know. Yes, I am. Okay.
And Michael is asking if you can show a diffusion effect transition.
I don't know what a diffusion effect is. What is that?
Like a cross between two clips. Crossfade.
Oh, wow. That's a great question. Yeah. Boy, I don't do that like ever. So that I can answer that question correctly or at all, I'll show you one way to do it. There is another way, and we'll stumble through it in a moment. But like, honestly, the way that I have that I always did it before is basically you overlay the two clips on top of each other, the amount that you want them to crossfade into one another, and then you just sort of do an insta fade in and then insta fade out. And then the effect will be that one fades out while the other one fades in. So that's sort of the brute force method, which I say it's brute force, but I mean that's honestly what's happening. Like, that's the quote unquote correct way. Dial your negative in, dial your negative out. So that's one way to do it. The other way would be with a composition, I feel like. Yes, okay, this is coming back to me, I think. It's a composition. It's probably not called fade. How about dissolve? Dissolve. So compositions are different from effects. Compositions affect two clips. And because they affect two clips, they sit sort of sort of between the tracks. It's a little bit weird. So if I'm going to drag this down, and you can kind of see that it almost looks like a clip itself. It looks kind of like a little half clip. So I'll drop it there. For whatever reason, it's, I guess it probably defaults to maybe that length. Maybe it's trying to tell me that it really wants me to be that long. That's probably for a smoother fade. So this is the composition that I've created. Now, probably it's set to fade from one, I mean, from bottom to top, but we'll find out. Yeah, that's correct. Cool. That was easy. So yeah. So it's a composition, not an effect, and it's a physical thing that sits between two tracks, and that particular one is called the dissolve. And you can change the length of that too. Like you could say, well, no, I really wanted a snappier, quicker dissolve. You just adjust the time, and it figures it out.
Thank you. Then Danny is asking about subtitles. Is it possible to enable, disable it for the public?
Yeah, someone emailed me about this actually, and I gave one answer and then thought about it. And this is, I think, one of those weird things where the way I do it is like the right way, but I'm going to admit that there's probably lots of other right ways to do it. So yeah. So Cadian Live has a really nice little subtitle feature. It's for whatever reason, it got stuck down here in the bottom right of my window. I don't know if that's where it normally lives. All of those kinds of things, I imagine, are, I don't even know where they are. View, probably. Yeah, okay. So there's a bunch of tabs and panes and things like that. A bunch of them are kind of on by default, I think. And they're there in the view menu. So if you don't see a subtitles tab, go to the view menu, select subtitles, and it'll pop up somewhere. So this is the subtitle thing. And it's actually quite nice. So let's say that we wanted to put a subtitle over this guy here. So I've got my, well, it doesn't even matter where it is, to be honest, but I can click in my subtitle thing, click the add subtitle button. There's the subtitle entity here at the top, and it's asking me to add text. So I could put down some jeepers. I really love editing in Caden Live. And then there's the little subtitle there, which again, probably for accessibility, not super easy to see, but it's there. And then you can extend, just like a video clip, you can just extend it or whatever, as much as you want. And you can just keep adding subtitles that way from this interface. The reason I don't do it this way is because this sort of bakes in the subtitles to your video file, which might be what you want. But traditionally, subtitles come as a separate file, a .srt file. And then your video player, like VLC or MPlayer or whatever, knows to look for a subtitle file or subtitle files and gives it to you in the in your video player that you can switch on and off. So to me, that's the right way to do it, is don't do your subtitles in Caden Live. Do it in a text file with in and out points, and then just let your video, the user's video player, play those subtitles. But if you for whatever reason you need them baked in, like maybe it's an alien language, you know, from outer space, there is no real translation, so there has to be like a subtitle, then maybe that would be a great use case for this. But that's it. That's the subtitle function.
Great. So one last question. It's a follow-up question from Extreme Monkey on IRC, who was asking about the
the
curve earlier exactly. So if scene one is too bright outside in comparison to scene two, would the Bezier curves help then?
Yes. If
too bright outside in comparison to scene two.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say a lot simpler. So if you're just like, well, I love the two shots, but they're just not right. They don't look like they're, you know, in the same place or something like that. Now there are limits. Like if something is way, way too bright, like we're never going to be able to make it look like she's not in a studio, you know? Well, actually that's not true. We could key out the white. Yeah. Okay. Maybe that was a bad example, but like if something is, here's a good example. Like this guy's nose, that's a hot spot right there. Like makeup should have been all over that. That should not be there. But that's information that doesn't exist. And there's no amount of Bezier curve that we could do to make those hot spots go away. Okay? Now that hot spot in your footage might be the sky. In which case, there's nothing you can do with a Bezier curve to make a blank white space to sort of like rescue information out of that. If there's information in there that's just being ignored because of that flat curve, then yeah, maybe you could help it. So what I would do then, let's just imagine for a moment that a very typical, very common scenario. Oh, I didn't even mention the razor tool. There's a razor tool in Cadian Live. You can just arbitrarily split a split footage. So I'm just going to kind of mix these up a little bit. Oh. There we go. Okay. So it's very common to be cutting back and forth between shots, right? And you want to make them equal each other a little bit better. So for that, you drop the Bezier curve on one, and then you drop Bezier curve on the other. There's no way to, you know, to magically make them understand what the other one is doing, but you can adjust, again, the luma is sort of the brightness and darkness. And my goal usually is, rather than trying to sort of capture what you think you want to see, I try to get a nice medium sort of between the two. Meaning that, like, for instance, this sky in this shot is brighter than that sky. This is a bluer sky. I probably am not going to be able to change that. That's not really something I'm going to be able to control. But I could try. I could try to like maybe pump up the white a little bit more, like way up at the top. Way up at the top. And then adjust accordingly. There we go. It's still pretty blue, to be honest. But what I look for are the darks and the lights. So I've got nice deep shadows here. I've got nice deep shadows there. So you're just really, you're color matching. You're trying to match the two shots. I think overall this one is actually a little bit more yellow than that one, maybe. So you're trying to just match the look of the two shots together. And then I just copy that look and paste it onto the other shots that are like it. Not the other shot, just so you're keeping the shots, you know, at their light levels. I'm gonna try to, I know we're running way out of time right now, but question has been asked. So let's go to blue. Let's try to make it a little bit lighter. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not happy with it. But yeah, that's the idea. You just you sit there and you just adjust and adjust and adjust until you kind of believe that those two shots are the same, even though they're not the same levels. You just want them to look basic. That's actually not bad now that I'm seeing it sort of without critique. That's not bad. maybe it's not more yellow, it's more cyan. But anyway, yeah, you mess around with it and you just try to, you abuse both of them equally in different directions until you get something that kind of meets in the middle. But it's very common, that process. That's super common. People do that all the time. You're just color matching between shots. Go ahead.
Thank you so much for this fantastic workshop. I think we all learned a lot. It was very interesting. And thank you, everybody, for coming online and for asking questions. And happy playing with Kane Live.
Yeah, let's do this again sometime. This has been fun.
Yes, I agree. Thank you.
Cool.